We do have a guest on the line that I'm excited to talk to, because she was actually the longest serving female CEO of any U.S. public company, which is a surprising company to hold that distinction because it's Playboy Enterprises. But we have Christy Hefner on the line. Christy, how are you? Thanks so much for joining us.
I am just fine. I was enjoying the conversation with Yoda Finland.
Do you have anything to add about Finnish people?
We don't know anything.
Well, I mean, what I would say on a serious note is that, you know, what's important is the climate report that the government
yes.
issued and tried to bury on Black Friday
yep.
that, you know, demonstrates in the most dramatic but scientifically grounded terms that if we do not start to change the policies of this administration, consequences, both human and economic, are just staggering. And the side discussion about Finland and the raking of leaves becomes a distraction for the bigger story, which is the really destructive policies that this administration is pursuing with regard to climate change.
Absolutely. Do you, and coming from your background in corporate America, do you think that is your belief one that's widely shared among Fortune 500 CEOs? Do you think that your peer group understands the severity, or is this something that has to happen on a grassroots level?
No, I actually think this is one of the cases where corporations, much like the Department of Defense, going back many years ago, literally couldn't afford to pretend that climate change wasn't happening and that they needed to put policies in place, whether it was with regard to alternative sources of energy or with regard to potential liabilities, that as financial stewards, if you will, they had to address. So this is one of those cases where actually the business community and the grassroots are aligned and in opposition to this administration.
That's incredibly heartening to hear. It seems like we might have gone too far past the point where anything but full national commitment to addressing this issue is going to get us anywhere. So it seems like we're going to require. Do you think that now that Democrats are in the House, we'll see more heads of corporations standing up to the president, speaking out against his policies, now that they know that there's actually some legislative avenues available in there?
It's an interesting question.
I know,
the calculus that CEOs make is maybe less who's in control of any of the bodies of government in the moment and more where they think consumers and shareholders are. And in that regard, you know, what's sometimes called ESG, environmental, social, and governance issues,
mm-hmm.
10 years ago were really on the fringe in terms of proxy filings or pressure being put on companies. Now is pretty front and center. And so what you find is companies themselves realizing they need to have a chief sustainability officer or they need to have a program for reducing their carbon footprint because they're getting pressure from institutional shareholders and frankly from employees, particularly millennials, who want to work at companies where they feel that they are doing good, not just creating products or services.
Huh. That's excellent. I'm hopeful that people will listen to the next generation coming up. They seem to have their stuff together in a serious way. So you've actually used your platform for a long time. I think you and I first crossed paths when I was working to elect Al Franken in 2008. And you've used this platform for a long time to advocate not just for some good, solid progressive policies, but for more women to be seen at in boards, at in C-suites, basically more female representation in corporate America. How are you feeling about that work now? We're seeing an unprecedented wave of women, and they look like America coming into Congress. Do you see the same kinds of dramatic changes happening in corporate America?
You know, it's an interesting question because for a long time we were at about the same rather depressing level compared to other countries,
right,
in boardroom and in, you know, Congress and in state legislatures. But I do think, to your point, we've made, at least in my lifetime, maybe the most impressive step forward in these midterms. There were three women that got elected who I worked for, Lauren Underwood and Mikey Sherrill and Donna Shalala. but they're just among the many.
Those women are some pretty solid ones.
Yeah, who ran and got elected. Now, we're still, let's not get too excited here. You know, we're still at roughly 20%.
Right.
So it's not, you know, where we should be, but it actually puts us in a better position than we are on the corporate side, to your question. I mean, if you had asked me, I became CEO in 1988, so if you had asked me back then where I thought we would be in terms of women in the boardroom and in the you know, kind of executive suites, by this point in time, I'm quite confident I would have said something like 40%. Mm. It seemed like a no-brainer, right? You look at the number of women getting law degrees, getting MBAs, wanting careers. You know, the pipeline was full of bright, ambitious women across almost all professions. And yet we're at the same 15 to 20% in the C-suite and on boards as we were back, you know, 30 years ago. So we are lagging now on the corporate side.
Okay, so this is like the only place where corporate America lags behind political America. We know that in terms of technology, in terms of innovation, in terms of ability to take risks, understanding the, like, corporate America is like what people on campaigns look to see what are best practices to get a thing done, for brand awareness, for any of that. Why in this instance is corporate America farther behind politics? Is it that what are your thoughts on it? I have too many.
I've come to believe that there are some structural problems, and while I think there are structural problems on the political side, particularly gerrymandering and voter suppression,
for sure,
in the main, you know, we do have a democracy, which I mean that everybody has to run every 2 years or every 6 years or every 4 years if they're president, and everyone gets one vote. In corporate America, there are no term limits in the main on boards, and there is no voting, if you will, even though there is the sort of patina of voting because shareholders vote, but there is a slate of directors that's put forward by the company, and it's very rare for someone not on that slate to be elected. And if they are, it's almost rarer for it to be because the push is for more diversity. It's usually because the push is from an activist investor who doesn't believe in the strategies of the present board. It's going on right now with Campbell's.
Right.
The battle between an activist investor and the present management and board, and that may lead to someone new being on the board. But it's not because somebody is saying, hey, your board is not representative of your consumers or of America. And I'm becoming a fan of actually maybe not a literal term limit, but a average term limit on boards. By which I mean, let's say it was 12 years. If you had a director, male or female, who would serve 12 years, but whose skill set was just going to be extremely valuable for the next 4 years, then that person could stay, but then someone else would have to rotate off after 8 years, let's say.
Right.
Because we only have about 3% of public board positions that open up every year, which means if we filled every one of them with a woman, like in my lifetime, we wouldn't get to parity.
Right.
So I do think that's part of the issue.
You know, I've gone completely full circle on term limits. When I started working in politics, I was like, institutional memory. Why would we do that? And if somebody keeps getting elected, you know, right. I'm thinking of like some of the, like Barbara Mikulski. I don't want her term limited out. I want her leaving when she wants to leave. And after 10 or 15 years of watching incumbent protection, which I think is translating exactly what you're saying to board chairs and board members, it's so hard to get in there.
Right.
That the only way that we're going to diversify the population at the very, very top is if we allow for regulated turnover.
Right.
It's just not going to happen otherwise.
Yeah, I have to be honest that everything I've seen in terms of research does not lead me to believe that we would have better government with term limits for elected officials.
Yeah.
What the research seems to suggest is that it entrenches lobbyists, and then, to a phrase you use, it loses a certain institutional memory. So I'd rather attack the, let's say, advantages of incumbency that seem unfair through structural reforms like public financing and ending gerrymandering.
Oh, for sure. If I had a laundry list of good government I wanted to get in, that's exactly where I would start. I want to make sure that we get to the reason why you joined us today, which is what you're actually putting on a live and online auction of some of your father's things from the company. So tell us about this.
Yeah, it's actually something that my father did that I didn't know about until he passed away, which is that he decided to leave all of his personal effects and memorabilia. So that's everything from, you know, his first edition of The Great Gatsby to his smoking jacket to his foundation, which I'm the president of. And the purpose of that was for it to be auctioned in order to provide the funding for the foundation to continue the First Amendment Awards and to continue its work with organizations like the American Civil Liberties Union and People for the American Way, and just sort of provide funding going forward. So this week, the Friday and Saturday in LA, we have about 800 items that will be auctioned in real time, which people can bid online from anywhere. And we're hoping that that will be both a big success for the foundation, but also, I think, knowing my father very well, I think he probably found it kind of delightful to think that pieces of his life would be spread around, you know, the country and the world by owned by people who were fans and friends of his and of the companies.
And of course, the First Amendment protections couldn't be any more germane than they are now. What kind of work is the foundation doing in light of this like unprecedented attack that we're seeing on the press?
Yes. Well, first of all, I certainly share your characterization of the times. So we've been holding First Amendment awards since 1980, and it becomes a very powerful way of calling attention to the contemporary battles, whether that's battle for free speech on college campuses or the battle of the press to be able to cover this administration, so that the First Amendment doesn't seem like, you know, an archaic document that doesn't have relevance in contemporary society. So this year's judges are going to be noted journalist Karen Tumulty,
I love her,
Atiel, and the head of People for the American Way, Michael Keegan. And they'll meet with me and the executive director of the foundation in February to review all of the nominations. And then in the spring at the museum, we'll give our awards. So that's one thing. Then another kind of cool thing the foundation did a couple years ago was it gave the funding to Brandeis University to acquire and make available to scholars and the public all the archives of Lenny Bruce.
Huh.
Of course, was very much at the heart of First Amendment battles.
Of course.
In the, you know, as Bill Maher has said publicly, you know, he took the arrows that then allowed, you know, people like Stephen Colbert and Bill Maher to do what they do.
Right.
And his daughter, Lenny Bruce's daughter, had owned all of the tapes of his performances and correspondence and didn't really have any place to house it. And my father, who had been a friend of and a supporter of Lenny Bruce's, thought this would be a wonderful preservation of an important part of history.
Definitely.
And making available for people to access. So it's been a variety of things like that.
Very cool.
Super cool.
Let us know where people can find the online auction, because I'm sure there are folks who will want to participate this Friday and Saturday.
That would be great. Yeah, they can go to the website of the auction house, which is Julien's, Julien's, live.com. And they can both watch it in real time and they can bid. And actually, I'm told that even though no item will be sold until the live auction, over 70% of the items already have bids online.
Wow. I can imagine. For a first edition, Great Gatsby would sound kind of cool, actually.
Well,
great, Christy, thank you so much for everything that you do to make sure that women are represented in every boardroom across America. It is much appreciated and even more needed than I realized.
Yes,
and thank you for joining us today on Signal Boost. We will be back with a little more after this.